NFL Show, part of the Mojo Sports Network.
All right, we are going to be running through the results. I'm going to throw it over to Yuri for the Melbourne-Brisbane game. Brisbane got up, so what do you have to say about that, Yuri?
Plenty of positives on Brisbane's end, Maggie, from Thursday night, and they pretty much control proceedings, I'd say. After probably Melbourne kicked that first goal through Alex Neil-Bullen, and it was pretty much all stoppages, right? That first quarter, I'd say the first 20 minutes, there were about 30 or so stoppages in the game. It was just a really sort of grind it out and try and really wear one another down through clearance domination. But eventually Brisbane's whole structure up four completely got Melbourne, and Stephen May and Jack Lever, the normal interceptors for Melbourne who've been doing it for a number of years, were just completely found out with through Eric Hipwood and Joe Danaher. They read the ball better. Brisbane were able to get those sort of, it wasn't sort of the most fluent 450 entries in the opening quarter, but they were sort of very, not haphazard, but they were just very rushed kicks and really caused a lot of chaos to Melbourne's defensive half. And I think it's something that served Brisbane extremely well. And Lachie Neal and Josh Dunkley, Hugh McCluggage all had really impactful games. And once the second quarter hit around two, could never really sense that Melbourne were able to turn around the tide. I think it was the biggest alarming bell for the Demons. And every time they went inside 50, they just kept kicking it straight down Harris Andrews' throat. He pretty much had a field day down back. And I think then the frustrations grew, right? When he only kicked, what, two goals to half time, it just pretty much typifies everything that went wrong with Melbourne's structure. And again, it's those glaring weaknesses that the Demons do have going forward is they get their fair share of inside 50 entries, but how much they're able to capitalize on those is still the growing concern. And for them to only have that amount of scoring shots for half just completely sort of sucked the life out of them, and thought, oh, at the start of the second half when Bailey Fritsch kicked that goal, I'm pretty sure it was Bailey Fritsch, it was Kay Chandler, when he kicked that goal to cut the margin back to an even four goals, that thought, oh, Melbourne probably get the game back on their terms, be able to wrestle some ascendancy through the clearances and the contested possession. But that was never the case. And Brisbane's just whole zippiness at ground level too. Charlie Cameron kicks that lovely goal too. Pretty much stole, I think it was one of Melbourne's errant handballs in their back half, and it pretty much really snuffed it out for them. But I think the one part where it fell for Melbourne that pretty much symbolised the whole woes on the night was Christian Petrarca and that running long bomb to no one from outside 50 and went straight down a Brisbane Lions player's throat. And unfortunately, that pretty much summed up the whole Melbourne experience, unfortunately, too. And when you kick, what, four goals to three-quarter time, and yes, they managed to salvage something in the last quarter of 8-12, but it just wasn't enough. And that's where Brisbane were just far too good on the night, too. And there's sort of a lot of areas that Melbourne have to work on. Clayton Oliver, yeah, did have his impact. You could clearly tell he's still bothered by that finger injury and, of course, having to wear that glove for however how long until that finger does recover fully. That's the other part to it. And Christian Petrarca was, he was okay, but didn't have his usual impact they had the previous week against Adelaide when he was, you could say, best on ground with those 29 disposals. So there's definitely areas for Melbourne to work for, but for Brisbane, it was all about them, and it was definitely a very commanding performance. And I think that 22 points definitely flattered Melbourne. I think Brisbane, if you have looked at the whole context of the game, you'll have said they probably should have won by about 8-9 goals. That's pretty much how it went for the Lions all night.
100%. Brisbane definitely dominated on that Thursday night. Now, moving on to Friday night, I mean, what a game. My Bomber boys got up. So I thought it was a great result for the Bombers who went head-to-head in the midfield, definitely with a team that has been so dominant for so long, right? So the Dogs, in fact, have won 10 of the last 11. So can you believe that? Bontempelli, he's got a lot to work on. Look, Sam Durham, you know, he rocks up and he went head-to-head with the Bont and won that battle for sure. Caldwell's another one that kept Liberatore pretty quiet and from having too much influence on the ground. So, again, I love seeing Jagger Stringer do his thing. He's in great form at the moment and up forward, and he's killing it. So That's a wrap for the Bulldogs and the Bombers. Now we're going to move on to Saturday afternoon. We had the Giants winning over St Kilda by 1 point. Alan, what do you have to say about that game?
Yeah, this was, I mean, to start off with, the Giants were just sort of dominant early, but able to get to a nice, comfortable lead, and they held it on quite well. They were sort of stream off the back line quite well with Whitfield, Ash. They were having great games. But there's sort of that three-quarter time, though. They started flipping, Ross started flipping the troops around, the players putting battle in the midfield, and all of a sudden they just had this midfield dominance, and through with Steele and everything, then all of a sudden they were just piling on the goals, and all of a sudden it was like down to like a couple of goals in the last couple of minutes, and Jebus were panicking. It was quite an absolute turnaround, and eventually got down to the last sort of play of the day where St Kilda got up, had that clearance, kicking into forward 50 with 10 seconds left, and there was a diving muff by, it was a Perryman to get the saving grace to the Giants. But it's sort of been the same sort of story, though, for St Kilda. It's like they let a team get out to a lead, like they did against Richmond, and they have to come back again. They're not able to play the full four-quarter game they're able to do. And that was an absolute scare for the Giants. I mean, I suppose losing their general defence down back early sort of to a concussion, but they were able to hold on quite well in the end, but definitely one of the scares so far for the Giants. But it was a very good game in the end, though.
Definitely. The Giants looking very dangerous at the moment. I love, especially their new jersey. Have you seen their new jersey? It's been, yeah, it looks incredible. So, Ash, you wanted to touch on the Adelaide Crows winning by 2 points against Carlton.
Yeah, and as a Carlton supporter, I was pretty frustrated because I think all signs during the week led to Carlton winning this game, and I was certainly pretty confident on the pod last week. And even in-game, sort of throughout most metrics, it's, you sort of saw the stats or the teams on paper and everything, all signs suggested Carlton would win the game. You know, on the night, they won the midfield battle, they won the battle in the air, they sort of won the battle when it came to sort of locking the ball in and pressure inside 50. But at the end of the day, it was sort of, it felt like Carlton almost pushed up way too high. And then when Adelaide went for that rebound, the ball was just going way over the top of, you know, the Carlton's defenders' heads. And it's probably not only that, but one of the few times where I've seen Jacob Weidering be beaten by, you know, an opposition tall the way he was. And don't get me wrong, he played very well, but, you know, Tex Walker kicked four, and then sort of our inability to lock in on some of those dangerous smalls, Isaac Rankin, Ben Keyes were extremely dominant on the night. So that's pretty frustrating. And I look at Carlton's sort of upcoming fixture, and it doesn't get any easier for them. It gets super, super hard starting for the Giants this week. Obviously, first in the ladder. Then, you know, you play Geelong, Collingwood, Melbourne, Sydney. Gold Coast may not be an easy beat either. Then you go Port away. Essendon obviously had a good win. Then you play Geelong again. So a lot of hard games. And it isn't really until maybe round 15 or so where it starts to get a bit easier. So look, it's a big test ahead for Carlton, especially with the injury list. You know, they have a lot of best 22 players out at the moment. McGovern and Saad injured during the game. Chera injured sort of in the days leading up to the game. Then, you know, obviously Doherty out with his ACL. Cunningham and Lockie Fogarty, important role players. Caleb Marchbank and Jack Martin. No one knows what's going on with them, but they always seem injured. Jesse Motlop did his hamstring again. So it's really, really frustrating. It's sort of unclear when it's going to turn, both on the injury front and on the form front. But yeah, 4-1, sort of on paper, you can't complain. But I can't really say that any of those four wins have been extremely dominant and comprehensive. So a big watch ahead for Carlton. It's going to be very interesting, I reckon, not only for Carlton fans, but the entire league, to see what happens here.
100%. Very frustrating for Carlton fans. So yeah, not too good there. But moving on to the Gold Coast, up here, nice and sunny on the coast. A huge win for the Suns over a very, very disappointing Hawthorn. The Suns, I feel like the Suns midfield, you know, was just too dominant. You know, they're just too big and bullish in there. So even with Warple, you know, in there as well from Hawthorn, but the Suns were just too good with the clearances. With King up forward, you know, he's just very dominant as well. And the Suns' first-year players, I don't know if you saw it on Facebook or Twitter, but having all the PBC boys there, getting around the academy boys was so good to see. So, yeah, the Hawks were very poor. And, you know, Sam Mitchell said it in his presser, it was one of the worst performances he's seen in a long time. So that's enough from the Suns in Hawthorn. Now, Alan, you wanted to touch on Port and the Dockers.
I think Ash last week, he said this is probably going to be the game of the round. It probably would have been apart from the Carlton Adelaide finish. But this definitely turned out the way you probably expected with these two sides. Like, Fremantle have an extremely great defensive back line as well as they have high press, etc. And then Port Adelaide, too, at their home ground, they just defensively set up so beautifully. So this was a very much an arm wrestle. And going in, you're thinking whoever's going to win the midfield here would win the game. And lo and behold, Fremantle won the midfield but lost. And that's mainly down to the fact that even though they had their midfield dominance over Port, the clearances didn't lead to really anything. They couldn't get the territory gain from it. And ultimately, Port end up having too many inside 15s and they probably overwhelmed them. But for most of the game, though, Freo seemed to have it generally on hand throughout the entirety of it. There was a point in time where, I think, in the second quarter, Port Adelaide were up, but then Trosh Tracy kicks three goals in a row. It looks like it's going to burst the game open. But to Port Adelaide's credit, they just held back, get that midfield dominance. They've got to get a couple of clearances, get that forward half game going, lock that ball in, and all of a sudden the momentum's gone. And they'll just have to grind it back into it. And it was just a grind from Port Adelaide throughout. There was players like Houston had played an amazing game. And ultimately, too, because of their dominance with their forward half that they'll actually have to do, a lot of that pressure that was at Port Adelaide was up to put on, it come down to the likes of Ryan and Pierce to have an equally great game holding up the back line for Fremantle and preventing the likes of Dixon, etc., getting really into the game. It was an absolutely brilliant game to watch in terms of especially Pierce's ability. He had ended up having 13 intercept possessions, which was a fantastic result. He's definitely in sort of all-Australian contention at the moment. And he's had a lot of flack given to him, especially last year. Like people like Kane Corns, especially having a go at his leadership. He's stood up immensely this year so far. But to Port Adelaide's credit, they're definitely showing they're still a force in this competition and definitely something that you'd be going over there. I think it's probably the hardest away game at the moment in the competition to go play Port in Port. But yeah, it was a great game for Port Adelaide and close, another close loss to Fremantle, but they're definitely playing some very good football.
Yes, Port Adelaide fans will be very, very happy with that one. So, moving over to the Sunday afternoon, we had Geelong beating North Melbourne by 75 points. A flattering win from the Cats, and I mean, a dominant display. I feel like they just had the luxury of, like, they literally rested Tom Hawkins, so, and they still got the result like that. So, the Roos need to get Sheasel in the midfield where his possessions can be more damaging. Rather than just being cheap kicks around the field, that's just my own opinion. But the Cats are looking very good and at their best. It's kind of giving 2022. They're looking very, very sharp. So yeah, it's very, very exciting and can't wait to see the rest of their season pan out. But moving over to West Coast and Richmond, Alan, you won't be too happy with the Tiger Boys, but we'll throw it over to Yuri with the West Coast Richmond.
Yeah, definitely one inspired performance. That's for sure, Maggie. And after conceding four goals to the Tigers, thought, oh, probably the same repeat as we've seen for the last couple of seasons, right? And Richmond towered up West Coast a couple of years ago in round 7-2. I think it was the tune of 109 points on that Friday night. And he thought, well, it's probably going to be the same three-figure margin. But they definitely dug their heels in deep. And unbelievably, that cold clearance momentum just went the Eagles' way with Harley Reid there doing his usual thing, only five games into his career. But even with the talk of Harley Reid having such a great game, which he did, and of course, getting a Rising Star nominee for round five, and Jake Waterman's six goals, which were a career high, Elliot Yeo's rounding into form, right? These first five games, he's averaging a tick over 26 disposals a game, I think 5.6 inside 50s, and about 8.3 clearances, which is just, yeah, totally. Just an absolute revamp of the last four seasons, which he only played 37 games, mainly due to soft tissue injuries. And he just couldn't get his body right to be able to play on the park for long periods of time. And of course, him having that off season fully to get his body right, but also to go to Qatar to really sort of sharpen him up to not only just, yeah, mentally, of course, but to get him back himself back in that peak condition where he doesn't re-aggravate another soft tissue injury, but his whole clearance work was just completely supreme. And yes, Richmond are down on fit bodies. We totally get that in terms of their depth through to midfield, which is taking a hit, right? With Jack Ross being sidelined for the next 2 months with a foot injury, and Tim Taranto being sidelined for the next 6 weeks with a radius injury. But the thing is, though, with Elliot Yeo, is that whole burst of speed, it looks as though it's back. It's back to where he was back in 2018, 2019, where he made two All-Australian teams. And we saw that against the Giants only a month ago when he burst from the center square and kicked that 55-meter goal on the run. It's just those sort of signs that you can tell right away that a player who's in form but also has complete trust in their body once again, that they're able to do those things that they used to do and be able to replicate it once more. So that was pretty well pleasing for the Eagles. And also the whole backline really controlled proceedings too. Jeremy McGovern there down back was just superb. And yeah, it's definitely a shining light, I think, for the Eagles fans who've been starved of success these last couple of seasons. And Campbell Chesser was pretty solid throughout for the Eagles. So there are positives for them to look forward to. And it definitely does bring into intrigue come Saturday night's Derby 58 against Fremantle, how much they can really use this win as a platform to really perhaps make it two wins in a row. And we saw last year in Derby 56 that it was pretty close until I think midway throughout last quarter. Unfortunately, West Coast injury carnage hit them in the end. But I feel as though, yeah, what they were able to replicate, right, was something that I think it probably came down to the previous week against Sydney. All those signs were encouraging right there. What they were able to do, take it up to Sydney through the contested possession, through their willingness to try and deny Sydney most times, may not all the time, that quick ball movement and precision by foot through the middle of the ground. They did stop that to various extents, but on Sunday was where I think they completely shored up the whole team defense. They didn't allow Richmond to generate that fluency. And we saw, I think, Alan, you saw one passage of play where I think Daniel Rioli trying to take on an Eagles play, and he ended up getting caught holding the ball. And that's pretty much what summed up the difference, what West Coast were able to do on the pressure standpoint, but also Richmond in terms of them, the whole structure after that first 15 minutes of the game completely breaking down and not be able to garner that usual run that they'd be able to sort of replicate at various times in the opening month of the season.
Yeah,
Definitely something
absolutely.
to smile about. Sorry, Alan. Definitely something to smile about for a West Coast fan, that's for sure. Now, guys, we'll be back after a short break as we dive into some more hot topics in the AFL world. Alrighty, guys, let's run through the previews for this upcoming week. So we got St Kilda and the Western Bulldogs, 7:30 Thursday night at Marvel Stadium. I'm definitely going to be tipping St Kilda. I know they only just lost by a point against GWS last week, but I think the Western Bulldogs still got a lot to learn after that loss against Essendon. So, Yuri, did you want to touch on St Kilda and the Western Bulldogs?
I feel as though it's probably two contrasting styles in a way too with St Kilda and what they want to do defensively, but also their ability to provide a little bit more run. And I think something that we've already talked about too with the St Kilda outfit, and one that we don't normally associate with the Saints. I think that's going to be pretty keen. They do tend to play well under the roof for Docklands, which of course does suit their leg speed. So that's something to watch out for there too with Wanganeen Malira and Jack Sinclair. And how much do St Kilda actually play Sinclair through the middle is going to be a real interesting part to it all, because that Sydney game last year, they swung him into the middle and he was probably by far the best player on ground that night. I think it was 32 disposals. So that's one to keep an eye out for if you're a St Kilda supporter, whether Ross does decide to move that Magnus or not. Well, we'll see early on. But I think for the forward line, the big blow is Max King being out. So how much of the pressure does go on to Tim Membry and Jack Higgins to really kick a big bag of goals? And then for their midfielders such as Jack Steele to chip in with their goal here or there too. And so that's one to watch out for too, because St Kilda haven't been able to put together high scores this season. That's the only concern you have if you're a St Kilda fan, even though second halves have been a lot better than their first halves in terms of getting goals on the ball on the board and really generating momentum from there. And for the Bulldogs, it's, well, consistency right for the full 120 minutes. And there can be a good quarter of footy there, or maybe a good 15 to 20 minute patch where, oh, they're completely dominating through to clearances and contested possession, and Liberatore, Marcus Bontempelli having their usual impact, and Adam Treloar, when he gets the ball out in open field, is running amok, or maybe a Bailey Dowell or Bailey Williams are sort of hitting up their targets, lace out on the wing, or Jason Johannesson running through half back. It's those things that you scratch your head as a Western Bulldogs supporter and think to yourselves, well, why can't I do this consistently for long enough? Because the other issue is, though, too, when they don't have the ball, is can they defend? It just sounds completely absurd to say that, but for at least the last couple of seasons, that has just been in patches and it hasn't been there for long enough, too. And unfortunately, you can't do that against St Kilda. And if they sort of really revert back to their shells, and we saw that right in the probably midway through the second half against Essendon, where they just were completely devoid of options and the whole confidence went from there. And Bontempelli, apart from that very good second quarter, was pretty much non-influential, which we don't normally tend to associate with him, with having only those 17 disposals for the game. And of course, Liber probably didn't have that usual grunt influence. And to cap it off, Liberatore is not playing this week because Shazada the club has put him through those concussion protocols, which is a big loss too. So it does open the door up too for other midfielders there to really step up. And Caleb Daniel not being there, that's just another baffling, mystifying, whatever you want to call it, ploy that Luke Beveridge has opted for. So that's another one that has really just left many Bulldogs fans probably in the dark as to what happens with Caleb Daniel for the rest of the season. But Jamari Ugle-Hagan's loss too, I think it's for personal reasons. That does dent three or four goals on the Western Bulldogs' list of goals that they need to kick on the night. So a lot of pressure goes on to Rory Lobb, who's, I think, back for his first game since the first round against Melbourne. So plenty of pressure on him, plenty of pressure on Aaron Norton. And again, say it's St Kilda backline, which is very staunch, right? With, of course, Dougal Howard's not playing, even though he returned through the VFL. You got Josh Battle there, who's been very good. Callum Wilkie. So it's going to be no easy ride for the Bulldogs, and trying to generate scores from the midfield through to their defensive half. But I feel as though this may be the week that the Bulldogs win. I just don't know why. I think the whole fuel of criticism that they've had to endure is going to get them over the line. I'll probably give them probably one or two final cracks to turn their season around. I feel tomorrow night may be the night that they get the 4 points.
All right, moving over to Adelaide and Essendon at 7:40 at Adelaide over on the Friday night. Now, I don't think I'm going to go with my Bomber Boys. I really did like the way the Adelaide Crows did play against Carlton. So I'm going to tip Adelaide just because it's at Adelaide Oval. And I just love the way that they went about it against Carlton. So I reckon I'm going to tip Adelaide by 25 points. So I think Essendon are going to be on the back foot all night. So I'll pass it over to you, Alan.
Yeah, this is going to be quite a good game, I think. Based off the fact that these two have come up with great wins last week, or it's probably unexpected in a way too. I'm going to be mostly looking forward to seeing how Adelaide back up their performance, because obviously the last few weeks they've been extremely dour, almost defensive ball movement side, going very slow on the wings, chipping the ball, and then not be able to explode from it. But they changed that so much up against Carlton. And we saw that, actually sort of touched on it, where they were the slingshot over the top of the Carlton defence and they get that breakaway speed. So they had that space in their forward line for the first time that this year. So far, they've always been kicking to a very contested forward line. Last week, they had so much space and they were able to score from it and score quite easily. Now, Essendon, that's one of the big issues that Essendon always have defensively is when they teams do break through, they can score heavily, and that's going to be something that they struggle as I think we'll struggle with, where I'll be sort of tipping Adelaide to get sort of dominance through their scoring ability from their back half all the way through them being against them forward half turnover, etc. But Essendon's midfield though was extremely good against the Dogs, so I think if they can get on top there, that gives them a really good chance. Sam Durham's game was excellent, as you touched on, Maggie, and I think he's really starting to actually make himself a very prominent player in the AFL at the moment. I mean, he started coming through as a Richmond VFL team, You started, you picked him up the mid-season draft, and he's like, yes, now he started, like, he found his feet. Now he's like, yes, I'm a full-time midfielder. So he's going really well. And same thing for Adelaide too with Jake Soligo. He's starting to really flourish too. So it should be a very good game. It should be high scoring. So it should be fun to watch. But I'll be tipping Adelaide by sort of 3, 4 goals.
Yeah, she'll be an absolute cracker. So I can't wait for that one on the Friday night. Now, moving over to Saturday at 1:45 at the MCG, we have Collingwood and Port Adelaide. I actually cannot wait for this one. I'm going to be tipping Port Adelaide because who's tipping Collingwood? So I'm going to tip Port Adelaide. I think they're going to be too bullish, definitely in the midfield. So I just can't wait to see Connor Rosie go about it. Just the way he played against Essendon was just unbelievable. No one could stop him. So I love the way that he went about it. And he's an absolute star. So he's my Brownlow tip. And yeah, Ash, what do you have to say about Collingwood and Port Adelaide?
No, Maggie, I think you summarised it pretty well. Who's tipping Collingwood? So, yeah, I'm going with Port too.
Yeah, no, 100%. Moving over to Carlton and GWS, 4:35 on the Saturday at Marvel under the roof. We've got, yeah, I mean, two pretty great midfields, hey. So I'm going to be tipping GWS. Sorry, Ash, but I'll be tipping GWS. I think Toby Green's going to have a blinder and kick four. So what do you have to say about that one, Ash? I know you would like to speak about your Blue Boys.
No, I mean, I don't blame you. I think Toby for four is probably a pretty good tip considering how things went last week against the Adelaide Smalls. So, yeah, I mean, I'll be tipping the Giants as well. I think with the injuries just sort of piling up at the moment, it's hard to see where there's sort of light at the end of the tunnel, even though there's not so much of a tunnel at the moment. But look, if there's one team that can sort of do it with all these injuries, Carlton have had them for the last, I can't even remember how many years. So they're used to it. Next man up, they can get the job done, but I still think the Giants will win.
Now up in Queensland, we've got Brisbane Lions hosting the Cats. So it's 7:30 on the Saturday at the Gabba. Absolutely love the Gabba. I love going there. It's a great atmosphere. I'm going to be tipping the Brisbane Lions. I think they're going to just absolutely light it up. I think Charlie Cameron, he's obviously playing. He went through the tribunal, but he's playing, and which is a lot of question marks and a lot of things up in the air. But he's playing, and he's going to put on a show and kick fire for me. So there you go, Yuri. Do you have to touch on anything with the Lions and the Cats?
Yeah, I think it's just that whole sort of, they talk about the Gabba, right, since Brisbane started playing finals back in 2019, a whole dominance at that particular venue that teams unfortunately haven't been able to crack. And yes, Carlton did in the opening round by coming back from a 46-point deficit to win by a point. But it's sort of just that whole territory we talk about with the Lions where they're so incredibly efficient. And it was the same thing that happened against North Melbourne, and it was the same thing that happened last week against Melbourne, where they're able to keep the ball in their forward half for long enough and force Melbourne, as we saw last Thursday night, into skill errors. They were basically fundamentals in a way. And I think Geelong, though, this is probably the one thing about the Cats is they don't get too rattled under pressure. When you see them transfer the ball from the back half, whether it's Jack Henry going for a short 15-meter kick, and it'll be like, oh, we'll take this mark from 45 out from our defensive goal, and we'll just go for another short kick. And then they'll try and spread it open on a particular side of the field, whether it's on the right side or the left side of the field, and really try and build those counterattacks from there. And everyone well knows about Grime Meiser's lethal kicking inside 50, and it's one that North Melbourne would just completely cut into sixes and sevens last week, because how many times did he hit his target inside 50? I think he had probably, what, 8 or 9 inside 50s, and about 6 or 7 of those kicks hit a target. And that's one, if you're Brisbane, you don't really want to sort of fall into, because Harris Andrews does tend to play off his man and be that third man up too. And they've got Jack Painter, who can also do the same thing and intercept. So that's probably one area that Geelong, for Geelong side of it too, that you don't want to sort of fall bait into bombing it straight down Brisbane's throat. But that's the same thing as well for the Lions too, with Jack Henry there, who's been basically back to his best after what was a pretty injury-riddled season last year. He only played 11 games with, I think it was a foot injury, which pretty much derailed his campaign. So those are probably just two areas of the ground that both the backline for Brisbane, the backline of Geelong, which are so well compact, and they hardly get beaten every single week. So it's one to sort of watch out for. And I think within the midfield too, Brisbane's midfield experience too, up against Geelong's young youthful midfield that they've got too. And they definitely aren't out of place. That's one bit for sure too, the Cats there. Brandon Parford, who's definitely reclaimed his spot in Geelong's best 22 because he was sort of in and out of the team too and didn't know exactly where he fitted. But especially if these recent retirements, right, with Joel Selwood from a couple of seasons ago too, Isaac Smith retired at the end of last year. They've sort of had to bring in this whole young next midfield brigade nucleus. Even though Parfitt's been there for the best part of 6, 7 years, he's what, 26 this year. So I think this is pretty much his time and he's taking it with both hands. And I still feel as though the whole Brisbane grunt, I think, within and what they've been able to recapture these last couple of weeks should be enough to get the job done.
100% agree with that one, Yuri. Now we're going to your backyard over in Perth, West Coast, and Fremantle with the Derby at 8:10 on the Saturday at Optus Stadium. I'm going to throw it back to you, Yuri, because I know you would love to talk about West Coast Fremantle. What do you have to say about this game and the Derby?
It's brought a lot of hype, I think, in the lead up to Derby 58, Maggie, with what West Coast were able to produce last week. And Fremantle's very encouraging start to the season. Two very narrow defeats, right, which basically went down to the final seconds of the game. And I think from the last probably five meetings, so Fremantle have won the last five, including last year's was a pretty bad Western Derby result for the Eagles. They end up losing by 101 points. And Fremantle, after conceding the first two goals, kicked 17 goals in a row, and the game was pretty much wiped out from that point onwards. But I think the midfield is within too, with Brayshaw, Caleb Sarong, Hayden Young there, throwing Jago O'Meara to roll through in that five to form a skipper. And then, of course, our West Coast midfield there, a healthy Elliot Yeo. And yeah, just I think also with Harley Reid there too, you can flow Campbell Chesser through the midfield. So they've got, and Tim Kelly, who's been in absolutely sublime form even through this whole bleak period for the Eagles, that it's pretty well evenly matched in that aspect too. And even up forward for West Coast, they'll definitely a lot more encouraging signs there too. Jake Waterman's performance last week, he's going to have the big task as well with Alex Pearce. And we've seen, of course, what a great start Pearce has had to this season with his intercept marking and marshalling the troops down there. Luke Ryan and Josh Draper, who's fitted in very well into the AFL system. And whether he goes on Jack Darling or whether that's Luke Ryan, because Ryan does play undersized for his height at 186 centimetres. That, I think that's the one thing people don't really know unless you're in WA about Luke Ryan, that he can play on the taller forwards and holds his weight extremely well. And that's no surprise one bit whatsoever with Fremantle's back six. I think they don't tend to get that usual recognition that they deserve. And within their half back lines with Brandon Walker there down back, and they should get Heath Chapman back very shortly too. And I think Sean Darcy as well is the other one too within that whole ruck system with Luke Jackson. So I think that's the real danger for West Coast with Bailey Williams having to go up against Luke Jackson, but then Jackson to exploit his advantage he has at his disposal to take Bailey Williams to the goal square. Because we saw in round two with the Giants and what Kieran Briggs did against West Coast and with Bailey Williams there too and just completely annihilate him. So I think if you're West Coast, you are pretty cognizant of that. You don't want that to happen. But for Fremantle, with their small forwards down there too, and West Coast backline, should I say, of Liam Duggan and Tom Cole, who were pretty good last week. And Liam Duggan's been a pretty shining light for the Eagles the last couple of seasons. And of course, taking a captaincy down there. But it's going to be a real challenge too, Fremantle's fleet-footed small forward brigade. I think Sam Switkowski isn't playing this week. So he suffered delayed concussion in that narrow loss to Port Adelaide. So that's a little bit of a blow for the Dockers, but they've still got Tom Emmett there. I think Michael Fredrick may be back this week. I think hopefully fingers crossed on that regard for Fremantle. But that's where I think for Fremantle the advantage lies with that whole small forward crumbing brigade there down there. And I think Liam Ryan is a potential return for the Eagles. He spent last week playing for the Eagles reserves in the great win over East Fremantle last Sunday. So he's one that's a potential inclusion too, because he had a very injury-riddled campaign last year. I think he had that pretty bad hamstring injury in Derby 56. So just one to sort of keep an eye out for. But I have Fremantle winning this game. I think the whole ascendancy within the midfield, I think should be enough to get the job done. And I don't think it's going to be a blowout. I don't think it's going to be a 10 or 11 goal hiding, but I think it's probably going to be within maybe 4 to 5 goals in Fremantle's favour.
Yeah, I'm going to be tipping Fremantle by 32 points. So hopefully I get that one correct. But moving over to the SCG on the Sunday afternoon, Sydney Swans and the Gold Coast Suns. I'll be tipping the Swannies, sorry, Suns, but I'll be tipping the Swanee, sorry, I'll be tipping the Swannies. I love the way that they're going about it, but it's the battle of the midfields once again. So they've got really strong midfields, and I'm really looking forward to that. So, Alan, did you want to touch on the Swans and the Suns?
Yeah, this will be a quite fun game to watch, actually. I think a lot of the eyes will be probably on Heaney in a way, so he's started the season with so much fire, on absolute fire. You want to see if he can actually continue. I think there was reports that Parker was going to come back for this game, but he's not this week, so he still has his full role in there. So it's gonna be good to see. But for Gold Coast, this is probably an opportunity to get the real proper litmus test against a really strong top four team in the Swans. If they could come over here and put an extremely good effort, it'll put a lot of fear into a lot of teams because it obviously gets this Hawthorn. They just dominated them so much. We could see that the gap now between Gold Coast, I suppose, and where they sort of sit now in the competition, the sort of lower teams, so they can just you can see a clear delineation between the two where they. Where they're actually ascending to now. It's where they can actually take the next step and start competing against the actual best teams in the competition. The Swans definitely are. And going away to the SCG is going to be the best thing for them to actually test, see how well their sort of system's starting to go because they're starting to really play that hard wick role extremely well. And some of the young players are coming in are starting to be real role players. I think Kaloisi on the sort of half-back wing now is starting to actually, like, you can definitely see that the Hardwick's, picked him out, so this is your role, and he then Hardwick loves his role player, so he's really taken it. And he said, first couple of games, it's been fantastic. So, I mean, coming as a sort of mature ager, but the young players as well, Ethan Reed, Will Graham, they're starting to really flourish too. So, for the Suns, there's a lot of promise coming through, and we'd like to see, especially their midfield, they can get on top against the Swans, they can give themselves a good chance. But I think with just the sort of mature bodies and this. That the Swans have with Goulden, Heaney, and they're just the form they're in. I think they'll be a bit too much, but so I'll probably be tipping the Swans by a couple of goals. But this will be a very good game to watch, though.
I've just got one point to point out too about Gold Coast at the SCG. They actually have played extremely well at the SCG. I think it's just one point of confidence that they do have. I think there was a game in 2018 which they came back from a 4-goal deficit and won that game. And I think it was 2021, if I'm not mistaken, too. There was another game which the Suns also won at the SCG. So there's definitely no shortage of confidence whatsoever playing at the SCG. Yes, it's smaller dimensions. It's a lot smaller than what it is up at Carrara, where the whole acres between one side of the field to the other in terms of its width is far more substantial. So, no, I definitely see no fears for the Suns. It's just trying to stop Nick Blakey through half back. It's trying to just stop through Sydney's run. And yes, Gold Coast have significantly improved with their running game. I think it's one thing that we see. And as you mentioned too, Alan, that Damien Hardwick is just building bit by bit by bit to really build this whole sort of, you want to say stable in a way too, with how he wants the Suns to play. And of course, very reminiscent of what his Tigers did. So yeah, I think they'll be right up to the challenge. And this is probably the big thing with the Suns over, well, since their inception in 2011, is keeping that consistency for long enough. And they always do it early on in the season, but sort of that back end where they tend to tail away. But I feel as though they're going to be right up to it. That's the big part too. And also with their whole back line with Sam Collins there down back and him most likely going to play on Logan McDonald. So that's going to be a really good test for Logan too against a guy who, right for, a couple of seasons at Werribee, won their best and fairest and goes way back into the AFL. So it's a really good challenge too for Sydney's forwards. And I think Joel Amati, if he is playing this week too, it's going to also be another great test for him because the Suns' back line is pretty dogged. They don't give too much away.
Yeah, it's going to be a ripper at the SCG. Can't wait for that one. But we are going to wrap it up. I think we are all dreading this game. North Melbourne and Hawthorn Sunday afternoon. Now, I'll just speak with this one, but I think Hawthorn are going to get up. I think they're going to win by around 12 points, and it's not going to be a high flashy game, but Jack Ginnivan is looking to kick four, so that looks all right. But I think we'll just wrap it up there with North Melbourne and Hawthorn. It's not going to be too flashy, but can't wait to see. Obviously, guys like Harry Shees will absolutely dominate. So with North Melbourne and seeing Hawthorn get the W, so I'll definitely tip them in my tips. But obviously, Richmond fans and Melbourne fans, you guys have the bye, so don't worry about that. You guys just on a little bit of a break, but that is all that we have for you today. Thanks, Alan, Yuri, and Ash for joining me, guys. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank
Thanks,
you, Maddie.
Maddie. Make sure to subscribe to Mojo Sports Network, wherever you get your podcasts, and follow us on the socials as well at Mojo Sports Network and our AFL Instagram at Mojo Sports AFL. Have a great weekend of footy, guys, and we'll see you next time. Thank you.